Welcome to On Demand. This is the AFR exclusive podcast where we do a deep dive into issues of our day, the moments, like what happened last week with the assassination of Charlie Kirk, the 24-year anniversary of 9/11, the Minneapolis shooting, the insane, brutal murder of the young Ukrainian refugee on public transportation. I mean, so much evil kind of packed into 1 week. It's been a just kind of really emotional roller coaster, for lack of a better term. I was talking with our special guest, Oren McIntyre from The Blaze, who's going to join me in just a moment, right before we started recording, saying, you know, I feel like I went from shock to disbelief to total grief, to anger, to resolve, and back to grief, and, you know, all of these things over the last little over a week that it's been since our friend Charlie Kirk's assassination. And there are so many different ways that we could go with this, and even on a deep dive podcast, there will not be enough time to cover enough all of the issues and implications of this from a, first and foremost, a Christian perspective, looking at the problem of evil, recognizing the truth of the gospel of Christ, that eternity matters, asking that question, what happens when we die, that my pastor so effectively answered the Sunday right after Charlie was murdered, to the questions of political violence, to the questions of violence against Christians, to the question of, you know, where do we go from here to build a moral and upright society, to the question of, you know, can we trust our institutions and, you know, the FBI and the DOJ and the state of Utah? What are the ideological framework that would lead a 22-year-old man to commit this kind of heinous act? I mean, there are just so many things, but we're going to try to cover at least a few of them today and hopefully speak to the heart of what people are feeling right now and also the questions that you have, that you're thinking. And so let's welcome in Oren McIntyre, who's been a good friend for years. He's a host and writer at The Blaze, thinks very deeply on these things. And this is why I appreciate our conversations, because I always learn from him. And even if we disagree on a certain policy perspective, ultimately, we're both grounded in truth of the Word of God and the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's what matters. And Oren, first of all, you know, your thoughts as you look back over this last week and the emotional roller coaster that I think we've all been on to varying degrees.
You know, I think like a lot of people, I originally, you know, I knew kind of Charlie Kirk at the periphery, is a guy who was, you know, kind of doing the campus work and speaking to young people. And then as I started doing what I'm doing now, I noticed that every person I talked to had a great story about Charlie Kirk, like what a good person he was, how kind he was to them, how what a great father he was. You know, anyone who knew him, even in passing, had a story about how he had showed some kind of kindness to them. And then I had the honor just a few weeks ago of going on his show. The only time I spoke to him, but he was very kind, very gracious, and of course we know all this after everyone the outpouring of emotion from people who knew him after his loss has just been devastating, but also heartening to know that a man can have that level of impact, and more importantly, in a business like this, can just have a positive impact on everyone around him. No one had a bad word to say. Everyone felt the loss because they knew what a great guy he was. So it's been both devastating, I think, for a lot of people, but also inspiring. The thing I've heard most often from people is, you know, I'm going to be a better person because of Charlie Kirk.
Mm, yeah, and I think that's the sentiment that so many people have, whose lives he touched, just through his reels, through his faithful witness and testimony to the truth of the gospel. I've been telling listeners on the radio side that, you know, my little brother, who's 25, probably not a week would go by when he didn't send me some reel of Charlie going, wow, you know, he really answered that question, or, you know, look at, I love Charlie, this is so great. And he never, unfortunately, had the opportunity to meet Charlie in person, but Charlie affected his life and affected the lives of so many Gen Zers and of students, but I think people of every age, and inspired those of us even in the older generations to be better faithful communicators and witnesses to the truth of the gospel of Christ. And that's fundamentally, I think, what we're seeing right now is a revival across America and across the world. And yet we're also seeing kind of this contrast between the revival that's really exciting and the, frankly, or in the level of just absolutely infuriating inaction from Republicans and institutions that I think are failing. I mean, Pam Bondi's comments, the current attorney general, about hate speech was just utterly mind-numbingly stupid, frankly. And of course, she cleaned that up a little bit. But I'm thinking, you're the current sitting United States Attorney General, and you can't communicate the difference between protected speech and, you know, what you're actually targeting. I mean, it was just profoundly bad. And it makes me personally frustrated at our leaders and saying, you're missing this moment. I mean, there's hopefully pastors are getting this, and they have, you know, the moment of reaching the world for Christ, which is the most valuable thing, and then building the policy from there. It's like, what? Why is this? We're over a week now since Charlie was assassinated, and I'm not hearing a plan, a you know, fire from Speaker Johnson, from, you know, Majority Leader Thune, even really from President Trump. I mean, I know he's personally affected by this, but especially from, you know, the people who, I know Mike Johnson to be a very sincere Christian, but I'm so disappointed right now in our leaders for, I think, really missing this moment for saving America.
Yeah, I mean, I think we both are disgusted with the Republican Party, but I think I am even more cynical about its ability than you. I expected very little from any elected Republican outside of the Trump administration. And as you say, even inside the Trump administration that has had its problems, we're at a very delicate time right now. You know, this is the kind of thing that triggers real violence and real instability inside of society. When people don't think that they are safe, when they think that their leaders are incapable of protecting them, they take matters into their own hands. And at some point, you can't blame them, because their leaders are simply not protecting them. And that's a terrible place to be, because that spirals very quickly. If you look at something like the Spanish Civil War, the reason that it started was because the left just kept assassinating people and the government wouldn't do anything about it. And people got tired of watching, you know, conservatives, right-wingers in Spain getting blown up by terrorists, and they said, just give me Franco, because at least there will be a solution. And, you know, the only way you avoid something like that is by the leaders who are in charge taking the situation very seriously and taking action that some people might think is a little extreme, but it's much better than people shooting at each other. And so I think the administration kind of, you know, flew and fell in the same day. You know, J.D. Vance was on Charlie Kirk's show. He was hosting it to honor his friend. And he, I think, did a phenomenal job. He spent most of the time talking about how amazing Charlie was and all the people who loved him and all the work he did. But sandwiched in there was a very serious conversation about what we're going to do next. And he and Stephen Miller were on there talking about how, you know, Charlie Kirk himself, and you can see this from his own tweets, some of his last tweets, was worried about left-wing violence, was worried that left-wing violence was going to escalate, that the terror network that has continued to operate in the United States unabated was going to continue to do violence to conservatives, that the funding, the NGO funding that was keeping it going, was not being hampered. He expressed all of these concerns, and Stephen Miller said he was right, and we're going to take these very seriously, and we're going to go after the terrorist cells, we're going to go after Antifa, we're going to go after the people coordinating online, we're going to go after the NGOs that are, you know, sending funding to these people, making sure that they show up prepared to riot, you know, that they can operate in broad daylight. We're going to go after these people. And that's what people needed to hear, that the government was going to take really serious action. You know, J.D. Vance said, enough of this both sides, I'm worried about both sides stuff. No, it's the left, it's Democrats, it is progressives who are, you know, encouraging violence. We are going to stop this. Like, this was the type of, you know, compassionate but strong rhetoric that needed to happen to let people know that the government was there. And then Pam Bondi was like, okay, I know that you guys crafted this very delicate, you know, threaded the needle exactly right between civil liberties and true law enforcement and protecting the people, but I'm just going to crash this into the side of a building and use the language of the left to say, oh, well, this is hate speech, and we don't do hate speech, and we're going to force people to bake the cake. We're going to make them print Charlie Kirk memorials, even if they don't want to, and just trampled on all of the goodwill and the battles that conservatives have been fighting for over a decade at this point. And so, I mean, it's clear to me that the administration at some level gets this. You know, President Trump has said he was willing to declare Antifa a terrorist organization. J.D. Vance and Stephen Miller said they have a plan for going after these people. But simultaneously, you have Pam Bondi out there just, I don't even know what she's doing. I don't even know if they're clearing comms over at the White House at this point, the way that there's, you know, it seemed like Stephen Miller was even subtweeting Pam Bondi about how she was doing things and what she was saying. And I just don't understand why there's that discombobulation at a time like this. We need everyone locked in, honed in, laser focused in this critical moment. And it seems like we have some people who have that, and then we have others who are just completely lost or incapable in this moment.
Yeah, and I agree with what you said, and you know, and yet when we see, you know, the plans, like, you know, Stephen Miller has been saying, and President Trump and all of this, do you think that we get as a country from kind of the anger and the maybe vague sort of broad brush plans to actual action items? Because, you know, I think this week way more out of patience than I've ever been to seeing the lack of any sort of resolve from Republicans that, you know, if this were the left and they had even a scintilla of a news cycle and a moment like this, I mean, just to put it bluntly, they would run with it. They would be so persistent and hardcore in using this. And it's like Republicans are just, you know, kind of apologizing and you know, both sidesing it, at least some of the elected officials. And I'm just tired of it. So, I mean, do you think that we actually move from anger in this moment to action?
Well, you know, this is certainly not a moment in which I'm trying to say I told you so to anybody, you know, but many people like myself, I guess you could say the new right, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, have been warning people for years that we are in a different place, that politics has fundamentally shifted, and you need to understand where you are, because if you don't, things will get really bad really quick. And we were attacked, you know, for saying that we needed to gain power, that we need to exercise power. You know, you're an authoritarian, you're woke, you know, you're just like them. But what we were trying to warn everybody is that the Mr. Smith goes to Washington, let's debate in the marketplace of ideas form of politics is something that relies heavily on sharing a common faith, a common tradition, a common belief, a common identity. You can't negotiate and reason through things with people who do not fundamentally share your beliefs, your worldview, your foundation. And when that goes away, when that's eroded from your society, you enter a different mode of politics, and you don't get to choose to go back. Like, you don't get to say, well, I don't want to do that type of politics. I want to do the debate type of politics, because what happens is someone shoots you in the throat. And so we're now at a time where we have an entire Republican Party built on an apparatus of a type of politics that just doesn't exist anymore. These people don't know what time it is. They don't know where we are. They don't know that history is just, you know, they're in the gaze of history. They don't get it. They think it's just another Tuesday where they collect a check from a donor somewhere, say something about Ronald Reagan, and then go home. And you can't do that. We're in a fundamentally different place. So we need warriors, and there are precious few on the right. There just are. It's not that they're bad people. It's just that they weren't made for war. They're not ready for a wartime footing. And the only way that we avoid things getting really bad is to have a much, much, much stronger and assertive right. And the Republican Party is simply not up to the task. So we have to learn this lesson. We have to learn it very quickly. And I, like you, am worried. I'm worried that, you know, the left is warning about the overreaction. Even many conservatives are worried about the overreaction. I'm worried that there won't be a reaction. I'm worried that there will be no action taken. And if no action is taken, then the left will get the message loud and clear that they can murder people without consequences, because they shot Donald Trump and nothing happened. And then they shot Charlie Kirk. And if nothing happens, then just murder's on the table, period. And we all know where that goes. So I'm with you in my skepticism and my frustration, but at the same time, I'm trying to stay positive and focus on the people who are trying to get something done and encourage them to continue. Because if they don't, the consequences are absolutely dire.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're also right, Oren, that you've had more skepticism and less optimism than me. And I think I'm coming over to your line of thinking after this week. And, you know, your book about the total state and, you know, the disintegration of our institutions and how they can't just be rebuilt. They have to be basically destroyed. And then we start from square one. I mean, this has to be a moment in society and in time where we can't just be angry about this and talk a lot and then sort of, you know, move on and then find a little bit of an equilibrium again. I mean, this has to genuinely be a turning point. And I know people have been, you know, kind of using that phrase sort of ad nauseum this last week, but really I think it encapsulates and reflects what the only solution is. And so in a perfect response world, what should we as conservatives be doing? What should Congress be doing? What should where should we go from here in terms of action, not just anger?
Antifa and BLM should immediately be declared terrorist organizations. Operating them should be illegal. The people who have been coordinating violence inside of them should immediately be arrested and locked up under RICO. We should be getting the NGOs that are funding them. If you're sending any money to these people, you are, you know, not allowed to operate in the United States at all. We need to go after the terror cells themselves. There are people who are still, I promise you, right now coordinating violence under the umbrella of both Antifa and BLM. As we speak, those people need to be rolled up and thrown in jail. We need to go after platforms. This was coordinated on Discord. For people who aren't aware, this is a chat program often used by young people many times in the video game world, but it's just a kind of across, you know, universally used now. But this platform, Discord, shuts down right-wing chats all the time. They shut down every time there's a single right-wing group speaking on it. They shut them down immediately. So they know what's being discussed on their platform. They know that leftists are on that platform coordinating the murder of Americans, and they're allowing it. They know it. And so Discord needs to be criminally charged. They need to be shut down. She needs to be sued into the ground. we need to have a very clear message on the right that those are the government actions, but we also need to have the social sanctions. We've seen a lot of people losing their jobs over celebrating Charlie Kirk's death, and that's good. Accounts on Twitter like Lives of TikTok and Aesthetics and Mostly Peaceful Memes have been getting, you know, Secret Service agents celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk. You know, like, these people need to lose their jobs, and they have been, and that's great. That's honestly some of the most meaningful work that's been done under this. The left is finally finding out that there is some consequence to encouraging the murder of Americans. And so, you know, those would be the direct, like, kind of actionable law enforcement items. And then I would say on top of that, we also need a big cultural shift that we can affect. But those would be my immediate, what should the government be doing tomorrow items.
Yeah. And I agree with those. And I hope that members of Congress will listen to this. I know a few of them regularly do. And I hope that that there is more action than there is just words. And already we're almost out of time. Orrin McIntyre, like I said at the beginning of this, there's no way we could possibly cover everything. But for the Christians, what do you think is the most important element of this moment? Obviously, besides, you know, continuing the truth of the gospel of Christ and some of those kind of big picture eternal things that have always been the calling, but in this moment, what is the most important thing we can do to engage protecting America and not just returning to the vision of the founders or, you know, kind of going backwards, but moving forward in a much better direction?
Well, I will say this. I mean, this is the most positive thing that is coming out of Charlie Kirk's death. I was at a local vigil for him that was put on in my area, and just nobody could stop talking about Charlie's faith and kind of how central it was to his life and how sharing Christ and witnessing to people, he just layered it into his responses. You know, you just see him, he's owning people with facts and logic, but he's also like literally witnessing to them and showing them compassion at the same time. And I think that is a beautiful model for how we as Christians should approach this. So many Christians think of themselves as needing to be winsome. We need to, you know, we need to charm people by being, you know, non-confrontational and just, you know, being kind. And you should be kind, but only, you know, only telling them what they want to hear, or, you know, giving them some kind of soft gospel. And that's not what Charlie Kirk did. Charlie Kirk was certainly kind. He was certainly loving. He was certainly compassionate, but he was also willing to confront. He was willing to confront bad ideas. He was willing to change people's minds and argue the truth. And because he was so convicted and passionate, but was also so compassionate, I think a lot of people saw that juxtaposition, and they saw strength, but they also saw love. And I think that's an inspiration for all of us. We need to be strong. Now is not the time to shrink from our convictions. Now is not the time to try to soft pedal the truth of Jesus Christ to people. But at the same time, we can show them the love and the respect. And that, I think, is what sets a guy like Charlie Kirk apart, because he had the confidence of a man who had seen the truth and loved people. But he also then showed that compassion to others. And I think that I think a lot of young people are seeing that. I've again, just heard so many moving stories of people who have had their lives changed by the fact that Charlie Kirk was a good Christian to them. And so I think that's what we should take going forward.
Really well said. Orrin McIntyre, I so appreciate your time today. And I completely agree. And I wrote a piece, you know, some listeners have heard about it on radio and probably already read it. But the title in Town Hall was Charlie Kirk, A Witness of Faith and Truth in Action. And, you know, the call for Christians is, as it's always been, to run our race with endurance, looking to Jesus as the author and finisher of our faith, and to finish well. And whether that be, you know, in 31 short years, like what Charlie had, or, you know, in 86 years that Pastor John MacArthur had, whatever the time is that we are given, the opportunities we're given, the value of those things that we are given, if we use all of that for advancement of the name of Christ, that's what it's all about. And it's not, that doesn't just mean then we all cease being in the public square and cease caring about politics and, you know, cease saying, well, you know, none of that matters. We're just going to go into our churches and that's it. We have to be in our churches so that we can go out and affect politics and policy and law so that we can freely exercise the rights that God gave us to raise our families and our children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. So they're not indoctrinated and go completely left like this alleged shooter that, you know, was, it appears to be, you know, raised in at least a conservative Republican home. And then in just a very short time became so radicalized that he was able to commit this type of heinous atrocity. I mean, it's almost mind-boggling, but that's, I mean, the studies show that even kids who are raised in a Christian home, how many of them lose their faith if they are not sincerely grounded when they go to college and they go to these state-funded institutions that are teaching lies and woke ideology. And so I think for me, this has impressed upon me how much more we need to take the Christian witness into the public square and say, I don't care if you're saying, oh, you're pushing your morality on me. Well, yeah, well, my morality is God's morality, and God's morality is the only one that matters. And you better bet we're going to try to codify that. You better bet we're going to try to impose that on our society, because without the morality of God, the measurable difference between right and wrong, good and evil, we have a society now that, as Charlie wisely said, was founded on Christian principles. As a, we are a Christian nation, but we no longer have Christian people. We are such a post-truth secular society, and that's where the conflict is. So my resolve is to work even harder and to hopefully inspire and demand more from those who profess to be Christians that are our leaders. So just closing thoughts, Oren, and, you know, for people who are listening and saying, yeah, I want to do this, you know, where kind of does the rubber meet the road in terms of saying, all right, let's have political engagement in a much more effective way than ever before?
Well, you know, the number of TPUSA chapters that are being founded right now is stunning. I've heard numbers like 32,000 requests to fund these and or to found these, and that's incredible. You know, that's amazing, and that's a great start. You know, that's exactly, I'm sure, one of the things that Charlie Kirk would want. But I think in a broader sense, as we both pointed out, the Republican Party is just a disaster on every level. And that doesn't mean that you just, you know, obviously you're not going to go vote Democrat and third parties are a waste of your time. Don't go try to found Elon Musk's party or something. But we need to recognize that the fundamental structure of the Republican Party is itself a barrier and not a asset to what we're doing. And so I think people need to start organizing. They can influence their local Republican Party. That's great. But you need to start having parallel institutions. TPUSA is one of those. It works with the Republican Party, but its own thing. You know, I know of fraternal organizations that are being founded, like the Old Glory Club, that are doing great work, Exit, other institutions where, you know, young right-wing people are working together. They are building bonds. They are creating community that allows them to be active in their community, to share their faith, to have a political, yes, but more importantly, a social and community impact. And I think that if we are able to build that kind of structure, then we will have the ability to then possibly influence the wider political landscape. But more importantly, we'll be working in communities that can help us build virtue, build connections, build lives that are worth living. And I think that's really the most important thing in this moment. We need to find and found organizations that are going to allow us to have that local community connection from which can grow the ability to then influence those around us. And so I think, you know, this is a call for individual action for all of us to be better people, to be better wives and husbands and fathers and mothers and sons and daughters to those around us. But it's also a call for community. It is a call of collective action to start organizing into these different institutions, new institutions, which can take over and replace that which is broken in our society. And we can found those things back into the Christian roots that really should have been at the core of what we were doing from the beginning.
Absolutely. And AFA is another one of those parallel organizations that, you know, we come alongside the conservatives and the correct policy. It's not about party. It's about policy and AFA action as well. And of course, the American Family Radio side to hopefully teach these principles and engage in action. And so I'm really thankful to work at one of those organizations that's doing exactly that. And it's encouraging to see that there are so many more chapters of TPUSA. And, you know, one of the things as a Christian, it's not about saying, you know, these organizations are, you know, which one should I be a part of or whatever. I mean, as the Bible says, you know, the harvest is ripe and the workers are few. We need to engage at every level, and every organization that is doing the right things for the right reasons needs support and help and your engagement. And so I'm glad that we partner with so many other organizations to promote good policy, to promote truth, and to advance the gospel of Christ. And that includes other churches that we encourage as well. So the harvest is ripe, the workers are few, so we need more workers. Get engaged, and what a great message. So Orrin McIntyre, thanks so much for your time this morning here on Demand. And if you're listening and you know you have another angle, perspective, or thought on all of this that you'd love for us to cover perhaps next week, you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at afr.net. You can suggest topics, suggest guests you'd like to hear from. Charlie was one of our most requested guests, and we were looking forward to having him on again. And we will continue to have to talk about his legacy and have him on in spirit. And so, Orrin, thanks so much. And I pray for Charlie's family and heading into this Sunday with the memorial service. I would encourage everyone to listen to that, participate remotely or in person if you can, and let's reaffirm as a nation that we are a Christian nation and go from there.